You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, last week, common sense prevailed with more than a little coercion from civil society, business and opposition political groups as government backtracked on its decision to ban large parts of e-commerce. We were one of the only countries, if not the only country in the world, to take that particular approach. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown has prompted a surge in e-commerce transactions. Increasingly, we're seeing numbers of consumers choosing to shop online instead of the physical experience of going out and visiting shops. It makes a lot of intuitive sense. According to a recent Nielsen syndicated study on the impact of the lockdown on consumer behavior in the country, there's been a sharp uptick of South Africans shopping online, with 37% of the respondents to that Nielsen survey saying they are shopping more online than they have in the past. So we've assembled a panel to discuss what this means for online retail in the country, which is still quite far behind markets elsewhere in the developed world. Lorian Venter, director at leading South African e-tailer One Day Only. Hilton Ichis, who's chief customer officer at DPD Laser, which operates under the Dawn Wing brand in South Africa. Arthur Goldstuck of Worldwide Works, and Paul Cook, MD of venture capital company Silvertree. Welcome, guys. Arthur, with e-commerce really set to get a shot in the arm here, what is going to separate the winners from the losers in this new COVID-19-induced e-commerce gold rush?
You're already seeing a tale of two COVID-19, so to speak, with those who are able to pivot or at least be very agile in their response to the demands, and then those who've clearly been caught flat-footed. And right in the beginning, amongst those that were caught flat-footed were the big players like Pick n Pay and Woolworths, because traditionally they have windows of delivery that you have to choose, and they've always been a few days after you've placed the order. And in the beginning of the pandemic, we saw that few days becoming 3 or 4 weeks before you could get a delivery. And they've already changed their models very fast. But one of the fascinating ways in which they have changed it, and which also points to a key strategy for the future, is that they have partnered with small, nimble players that, for example, do fast food deliveries via motorbikes or the likes of Uber Eats and so on. So Pick n Pay have partnered with a number of players, so has Woolworths, so has Checkers, and that has enabled them to become far more agile. So that, I think, is one of the key trends we'll see in the near future, along with the fact that far more consumers have discovered the effectiveness of shopping online. So once we come out of this crisis, a far bigger proportion of the population will be used to shopping online, and they'll continue with that behavior. But just to stress, it's not either or. What we'll see emerging is an omni-channel strategy where, amongst consumers, that is, where they will choose to buy certain products online and certain products in store.
And I think omnichannel was a big trend, a buzzword pre-COVID, and many companies paid lip service to it. Those who didn't invest in their real online presence and ability to service that market are now being, as you say, found out caught a bit flat-footed. So I think there's going to be a bit of a scramble to catch up now. Lorian, One Day Only was really built from first principles. You didn't come with a legacy brick and mortar background. What sort of impact have you seen COVID have on One Day Only?
I think, Arthur, your point on agility and pivoting fast is my first points too. And I think from One Day Only's point of view, we are a small enough business to have been able to turn very, very quickly and respond. So I think we have changed the types of products that we are selling at the moment. We've changed to really focus on essential items, which means we've got a lot of food products on the site, which has been something new for us, but very, very successful. And I think the point is for us to be agile and to respond to the data that we get every single day, to see what is selling, what's not selling, and what's the new legislation that comes out daily? How do things change? So from One Day Only's point of view, we have moved forward very, very rapidly by just responding to what's going on around us. And that's been an exciting thing.
big part of this is the supply chain and logistics and getting the product from store, be it at a warehouse or be it a physical store, if you're a Clicks or a Pick and Pay, to the consumer at the end of the day. And Hilton, that's really where Dawn Wing comes into things and has been prepping itself for this for 7 years, effectively. So cometh the time, cometh the solution, I guess. Talk to me about some of the challenges in the supply chain, in the logistics of getting products from the consumer or from the retailer to the consumer safely and quickly, because brands need to partner with firms that they can trust here. And to Arthur's point, it is about partnership. Very often we don't see the retailers having this capacity to do it in-house.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. You know, at DPD Laser, we've got the benefits of being part of one of the biggest express parcel businesses in Europe. And so with their insights in Europe and the fact that they lead the space there, and with the insights of Laser Group here in South Africa, you know, as you say, we positioned ourselves for this probably 7 years ago, just over 7 years ago now. And you know, as you say, kind of we feel like our time has almost come. I think much like the retailers, I think from the courier industry, if you haven't positioned yourself for this and you haven't invested in things like technology and operational excellence and building, you know, bespoke solutions for certain categories, then I think you're gonna struggle. I think in terms of the difficulties, I think one of the difficulties that we see now, which is not new to us, is being able to scale. You know, every year when Black Friday comes, as logistics businesses, we have to scale to kind of 40, 50, 60% plus on normal volumes. You know, the difficult part of COVID is in peak periods, we normally get kind of most of the year to plan for that. In this case, we've had about, 6 days to plan for it. So, you know, having said that, we've managed to scale to plus 65% over the last 7 days. And we've used the experience of kind of seven peak trading periods to help us do that effectively and efficiently. I think one of the other things that is critical, obviously, at this point is the hygiene factor and being able to offer contactless deliveries. Now, many of the courier companies are doing that in different shapes or forms. Some are making customers sign with their own pens. Some are just capturing names on a device. We've managed to leverage off the technology we invested in and have enhanced that experience to the point where, as of today, we're at the doorstep of the customer. We're sending them a link which allows them to sign for the parcel on their own screen, on their own device, without having to download any other sort of app or any other function. So, you know, that allows us critically to still capture the signature of the customer, which we geolocate and we timestamp, which gives us clarity and on the fact that the parcel has been delivered. So I think, you know, the contactless delivery is a challenge for some. And the scalability certainly is something which some courier companies will really struggle with.
On the issue of scalability, we'll come back to that, because one wonders whether or not this new normal means that courier is going to have to operate at a certain scale for a longer period of time now, not just respond to key moments like Cyber Monday or Black Friday. Is this going to be the new normal? But Paul, to bring you in here, Silvertree has invested in some of the top e-commerce platforms in the country, PriceCheck, UCook, CyberSeller. You really understand the space of e-tailing and e-commerce fundamentally. What do you look for in an e-commerce platform when you go in and invest?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the answer to that question has clearly changed in the last few weeks. But I mean, at the end of the day, we've always betted that the future is online and that South Africa will follow the rest of the world. And, you know, we didn't expect it to follow quite as quickly as it has done. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, what we look for is businesses that can provide excellent experiences that are better than brick and mortar. And so things like UCook, where you get a box of ingredients and a recipe every week, is an experience that a physical grocery store can't easily replicate. And that's been exciting. I mean, I think what we've seen in the last few weeks is obviously having to deal with 2 or 3 years of growth happening within 2 or 3 weeks, or, you know, a month or two. And that's been a real challenge. But it's come down again to agility. It's come down to being able to hire quickly. It's come down to supply chain challenges we've had in UCOOK and also in Faithful to Nature, which is a natural and organic products retailer. We've seen lots of our suppliers shut down, stop operating, not be able to find packaging material. And so we've had real problems keeping stuff in stock. Never mind the excess demand from customers. Just being able to find suppliers has been a real challenge. Luckily, the couriers have done a great job, including Dawnwing. So thanks very much, Hilton. I think you've been able to at least solve that one set of challenges for us. But I mean, at the end of the day, coming back to your question, I think e-commerce is about offering a better service than you would get in physical stores, and that's what we've always looked for. And that's what we continue to look for now. And right now, that includes safety.
And I think service is a key element as a user of e-commerce. Arthur, there are certain e-tailers out there, or retailers who've adopted omnichannel that get it right. The website's easy to use. You get on there, the click is easy, the payment is easy. They've offered you a number of different payment methods. And then as soon as your order is placed, you get an SMS or an email. You can track the delivery all the way through, and it doesn't take a lot of time. It's almost a pain-free experience. The experience is great. That is still, to my mind, in the minority in South Africa. I think many retailers, if you go onto their online offerings, haven't got this right. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges from a service perspective to make this experience far more enjoyable from a consumer perspective?
Quite a few challenges. One of the key ones is that most of the retailers and most of their partners are now relying on apps, and the apps are still at early stages of their evolution. I think one can see it almost as the beta versions of the apps having been rushed into a market because of sheer demand and not wanting to miss this particular boat. So what you find is the apps themselves are dodgy, but the payment mechanisms are sometimes questionable. But probably the worst experience for most people is when they don't receive what they ordered and when they don't get the refunds for what they paid. And that is an extremely common experience at the moment. So a lot of these players are in fact damaging their reputations by firstly making these kinds of mistakes, which is understandable, but secondly, not making amends rapidly and with sincere apologies to customers. We find that the back end and the customer service is severely lacking in some of these services, especially where it's a one or two person operation that has had to scale up very quickly. They don't really have the experience, they don't have the logistics, and they don't have the mechanisms in place to firstly automate what can be automated, and then to let's say throw a lot of customer service at the customer.
We've been speaking about delivery as a key element to this, Hilton, and the non-delivery of items, to Arthur's point, can be a real headache. How should this be handled in a way that doesn't negatively impact the business case? Because one can imagine that endless trips back and forth using a courier service add to the cost of delivering these services. How does one ensure that you integrate this into your back-end systems to ensure that you're not making these kinds of mistakes and ruining the customer experience at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's important to touch on, and I think, yeah, it's the retailer's job to merchandise correctly and offer proper checkout baskets and payment methods and all the rest of it. It's our job on the other side to ensure that the delivery process is as convenient as possible. And everything that we've built over the last 7 years has been predicated around kind of driving hyper convenience for the customer. Now, one of the ways that, you know, we try and do that is to put the customer in complete control of when and where and how they get their parcel. Of course, standard services apply, next day, economy, 3 days, whatever it might be. But it's kind of that in-flight process of we've notified customers that their parcel is coming to them and it may not be convenient. And then using our technology to give them the option to change the details of where that parcel is going or who it's going to kind of in flight. So, you know, we're doing those things. And really the point for us is to drive up first time delivery success rate. Obviously, commercially, that's the best way to do it for us. But for the consumer, It's to drive their experience and ensure that they feel well looked after in the process.
Lorien, from a user experience, consumer experience perspective, what have you learned over the years with One Day Only that speaks to these issues of A, not being able to find the right product, or B, not receiving the right product at the end of the day, or D, not being able to pay with your preferred payment technology. I know many websites still only use credit cards. Many of us are using Zap or SnapScan on our phone. How have you approached it?
Definitely. I think making sure that customers feel comfortable, firstly, on your website is incredibly important. And I think one of the things that is happening right now is that people are recognizing who are the credible websites to be shopping with, who's going to handle your data and your details with care. And I think that is a really key focus point for us to be able to communicate to customers, A, that we're a very credible site, and B, that we have all the technology in place to be able to protect credit cards, etc. So I think that's an important point. But in terms of payment methods for customers, it really is important. They want to be able to have as many options as possible. So we've got options right the way through to from credit cards to instant EFTs to SnapScan and Zapper, etc. So I think that is really important. We spend a huge amount of time on the site making sure that we focus on user experience, and we have a lot of experts who are constantly testing and updating our site, and we actually are doing a new release of the site in a short while using all that information. So from a customer's point of view, we are constantly looking at the customer journey. We have team members where that is their primary focus, is looking at the customer journey from purchasing. Does it work easily through to can they get their deliveries, etc. So from a business point of view, customers are always king, and that's our focus. But it's something that you have to constantly work on. Technology changes all the time, the processes change all the time, and so it's an ever evolving science that we really are focusing
with each new technology. I just interrupt there. Hilton, for example, talking about contactless signing for a parcel, that now becomes the expected norm in the eyes of the consumer, so everyone's got to adapt to that digital inflation, so to speak, and that places a lot of pressure on the incumbents.
Yes, yeah, it does. And we've got a really big development team that we've got people who are working on our existing site, we've got people working on future projects, we've got companies working on various sides of it, looking at our user experience. So that is very much a big part. I think a lot of people think that just having a little online site is quick and easy, but these days there is a lot of technology that goes into every single, where every button is placed and how everything works together.
Paul, as an investor, you're surveying the landscape at the moment. There must be some really interesting opportunities that will emerge because the next 24 months we'll see physical distancing as the new normal, at least until we've got a vaccine for COVID-19. Where do you see the biggest opportunities in South Africa? Where are you looking at SilverTree?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, right now we're looking at keeping our helping our current portfolio keep operating amidst the growth, and I'm spending most of my time operationally in our current portfolio. But I think you're right. There are lots of opportunities. And starting, sadly but importantly with talent, I'm seeing a huge number of people who are looking for new opportunities at the moment, which is a reflection of where we are as an economy, but also an opportunity for potentially some smart people starting up new and exciting things that will blossom over the coming years. I think beyond that, everybody who is offline is trying to get online, and so there will be a lot of opportunity in people who help that process happen. So everything from training through courier, through payments, through software development. And then a lot of online players who are going to accelerate and do even better and grow a lot more quickly. I expect that we will see some return to offline as the malls open up again, but a lot of people will stay online. And that's what we see in the rest of the world, who've places like China that are further along the process than us. So this is going to be a step change in online shopping, and I think that's exciting. I think what is still interesting, especially for me, is to see what happens in the restaurant space. So we had recently done an investment in a online delivery only restaurant chain. So no physical restaurants, only online delivery. And we were taken by surprise by online food delivery not being part of the essential services, but nonetheless, that's now opened up again. And I think we will, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to industries like restaurants. How do they come back? Can they come back? And how much of that is going to be online?
Yeah, as we were discussing yesterday, also the regulations that outlaw selling alcohol with your ordered food don't seem to make a lot of sense when the government is worried about a flood of people to bottle stores when those open up again. But I digress into yesterday's conversation there. Arthur, as we reach the end of our time here, an important part of this for all retailers, but let's maybe focus on the mom and pops here, because we know the big retailers have had their strategies for some time. What about those new entrants, to Paul's point? Everyone's trying to get online now. You're the local hardware store. You've never thought about having an online presence, and all of a sudden there is a demand. There's a key driver here to get online to order your paints or your screws or all of that. What should the mom and pop store be thinking about when they approach this e-commerce journey?
Aside from the many issues that your other guests raised about the kind of approaches that have to be taken and the kind of integration that has to take place, they also need to be very aware of how the patterns of the e-commerce have changed and are going to keep shifting. So for the newcomers and for the small players going online, to adopt the strategies that worked before are certainly not going to work now. So among other things, they can look to China and the experience in Chinese e-commerce at the moment. And there's quite a few very significant trends and very clear trends. One is that consumers are shopping far more rationally. There's very little impulse buying and there's very little luxury purchases. So what you're seeing there is also being more economical with their purchases. So you have to offer value, and you also have to look at what people need rather than what you're going to try to convince them to want. Stocking up is a big focus. Group buying is a big focus there. And then finally, the migration to omnichannel shopping is critical. So you ideally have a physical and an online presence combined. Not so easy for the small player, but if you have a small physical store, then having that combined with some kind of online presence where you're offering, let's say, a rational spending option is going to be your best approach.
When it comes to delivery, Hilton, does it make sense for the smaller mom and pop to take that delivery in-house, employ a couple of guys on scooters to service in their geographic footprint around a few suburbs? Should they be partnering? How should they be thinking from a cost perspective to approach the delivery side of e-commerce?
Yeah, Michael, I think, look, they absolutely can. I think one of the benefits that the couriers bring is we get to aggregate that volume across many, many customers and get economies of scale, which ultimately drives the price down. You know, equally, it's very difficult in the B2C space to make a successful delivery first time without any technology. So then if they're going to do it themselves, there's investment into technology that they'll need to take place in order to do it effectively. I think one of the things which we focused on very early in our journey is building really simple integrations of varying complexity for different sizes of e-commerce customers. So very, very simple, all the way up to live quotes at checkout and so on and so forth. So there's a full range of integration options. And many of the other couriers offer similar options. But, you know, the point only is it has become so easy to integrate with couriers, whether it be through their own integration, whether it be through plugins on the main kind of big web platforms, that there's really no need, in my own view, for them to be doing it themselves. If I can just touch quickly on the kind of categories question, I think, you know, some of the categories that we've seen come through very, very strongly over the last year or two, which we've kind of been involved in and built some bespoke solutions for, is around the delivery of white goods. So to Arthur's point around, you know, necessities, we've seen a massive spike in the number of white goods that we carry for B2C. Also fresh produce, Paul spoke about it. You've seen huge explosion in the delivery of fresh produce, even pre-COVID through UCook, et cetera. And to come, you know, we're now building a solution for the liquor market. And I think there's no doubt that that is one that will explode in the coming weeks.
I saw you smiling wryly at my comment about the liquor industry earlier. Hilton Hayter, thank you very much. I think a very interesting panel, great insights into the future of e-commerce in South Africa. That was Hilton Hayter of DPD Couriers, part of Dawn Wing, who was joined as well by Lorian Fenter of One Day Only. And we had Arthur Goldstuck of Worldwide Works and Paul Cook, MD of venture capital company Silvertree. From bricks to clicks, the global pandemic is a challenge like no other for retailers, but what a time to turbocharge those outdated e-commerce offerings. I think retailers that don't are surely at risk of not surviving over the next 2 years.
This is Classic Business on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
That's it for tonight. Thanks to Mataba Taba Radebe and Andres Matlangu back in the Houghton studio. I'll leave you in the hands of Maestro Richard Koch in Johannesburg and San Mohammed in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town. Good night.